Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooton, Judge Werke, Judge Kopaki, and the Honorable Carol Hooton presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. Welcome to this session of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We're very happy to be here in beautiful Bemidji, Minnesota. And the first matter on the calendar today is the case of Batten versus Fox. And counsel, if you would, you will have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral argument and let us know who you are representing. And we will proceed at this time. The appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Del Ray Sparby. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Eiley, Sparby, and Hosey out of Deep River Falls, Minnesota. And our office represents the appellants today, Lyle Batten and Catherine Batten. Excuse me. I understand that the standard of review in regard to the district court's finding in an adverse possession or boundary line by practical location case is very high and will only be set aside by this court if the findings are found to be clearly erroneous. The finding is clearly erroneous if the reviewing court is left with the definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made.
And what is the burden of proof at the district court level for proving an adverse possession claim?
I believe it's clear and convincing evidence, Your Honor.
Which is a higher burden of proof, correct?
It is, Your Honor, and as I understand it, every presumption is deemed to be against the person who's asserting the claim of adverse possession as well.
Okay. All right, and how do you think that the judge's findings were clearly erroneous with regard to the adverse possession claims?
In regard to the findings, Your Honor, the district court judge found that there was only sporadic or occasional use in regard to the disputed area. We believe that that is clearly erroneous in light of the fact that the appellants in this case moved in or purchased a property in July 20th of 2000. And since that time, from the date that they took possession, there was a defined and recognized boundary line with the neighbors to the south. And during the entire time from when they first moved in, they occupied the yard area, the yard and lawn residential area, up until that recognized line to the neighbors to the south. And I think where the court made a mistake is trying to say that there had to have been some sort of affirmative act, structure, building, or something else placed on that lawn area, rather than recognizing the lawn area itself as being occupied. So the occupation and the use of the lawn area as a residential lawn area actually started on July 20th of 2000 and continued throughout.
All right, and so I take it, and I'm looking at the specific finding that you are contesting is finding our conclusion number 3, that the Battens had not proven by clear and convincing evidence the adverse possession claim.
Right, and it's somewhat confusing, Your Honor, because the district court did find that the Battens had proven adverse possession.
Well, wasn't
just
that
in regard to an undefined area?
Right, and that's with regard to the boundary line that's going through the house, correct?
Correct, and I think that's where there's also been a misapplication of the law to the facts.
All right, well, let me ask you this, because I want to get to the law. Isn't with an adverse possession claim that you have to show that you are adversely possessing it in a manner that's hostile to the title of the property and that you're using the land exclusively?
Correct.
All right. And in this case, the court found that there was not an exclusive use of this land. And they mentioned, I think the court mentioned the fact, and the opposing counsels mentioned the fact that the respondents mowed it. Apparently, Mr. Bylander mowed it 8 to 10 feet north of the tree line. and the respondents claim their children played on this same parcel of land, and their grandchildren played on it. Isn't there facts in this record that would support the court's finding?
If I may, Your Honor.
Right.
I do not believe that that is the case. And in our reply brief, we also stated the fact that the children playing in the use of it was not the disputed area, the contested area. It's actually area owned by the respondents that's further south of the line on their property. So if you take a look at the historical Google Maps, you'll see that there's kind of a swampy area. And that's the area that they're referring to, the fact that they had mowed and used that area and parked their campers there. I don't believe that that testimony was related to the disputed area that's north.
Okay, so is that with regard to track B then? Is that what you're claiming is track B?
Correct.
There may have not been exclusive use there.
Yes, track B would have been exclusive use.
Okay, well, I'm not...
I know it's somewhat confusing.
No, and I know track A is actually the area... Isn't track A the area that's closest to the house, at least the Batten's house?
Correct. Track A would have been essentially located in the southwest corner of Allen's property.
Right.
And track B would have been located in the southeast corner down by the river.
Right, and so where are you claiming then that you're acknowledging that the respondents use that property?
None of those areas, Your Honor. That area that they're discussing and what was referenced in the respondent's brief as parking a camper, having the children play on it, doing additional mowing. If you take a look at that, and I pointed it out in my reply brief, that is an area further to the south that has always been the respondent's property. So when they talked about what have you done in that area, it's our position that the respondent was confused and referred to the swampy area where they had done additional mowing, excuse me, had additional use of the property, but was not referencing parcel B and or tract A. And if you take a look at the testimony, when asked again about it, the respondent recognized that when they had mowed, they followed the mowing lines that had been given to them by the prior owner, Mr. Bylander. And that, again, would have just been 8 to 10 feet north of the midline of the tree line. So I don't believe that there's any evidence in the record that anyone has ever maintained, regularly mowed, trimmed, done anything in the disputed tract A other than my clients during the entire time.
All right.
They've been in possession since July of 2000.
But it's my understanding that there were trees planted by both Mr. Bylander and your clients as well in that area?
Correct, on the tree line area itself. There was testimony from Mr. Batten that he had planted some trees, spruce trees in that area, and there was testimony from Mr. Bylander that he was the one that planted the spruce trees on that tree line.
And the district court didn't factor that into its analysis?
I don't believe so.
The district court was relying on standard, the case that, as a dispositive case, that your clients had not established a continuous use, and you've cited some non-published cases to refute that, and that's what I'm getting at. Is there anything else that's come to light as far as your research that would stand for the proposition that the tree planting should be another factor to consider?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the record shows that in that 8 to 10 foot area north of the tree line, that was mowed by both parties, just kind of as a neighborly thing going back and forth, and that itself would not establish the adverse possession. It's our position that the adverse possession would be established from the recognized boundary line as testified to by Mr. Bylander. And he testified on transcript page 143 that he believed the recognized north boundary line of his property was from the bush shown at exhibit 21 to the large cottonwood tree, which was circled on exhibit 14, and then extending on a line running east of the river located 8 to 10 feet north of the midline of the planted spruce tree row shown on exhibit 14. And it would be our argument that that should be the line the court should use to determine adverse possession, because I don't believe there's anything in the factual record that would show any possession or any use or any maintenance of that area north of this line by either Mr. Bylander or by the respondents. And during the entire period of time from July 2000, it's been used as a residential yard area by the appellants.
All right, so it's your position then that as to that southeastern portion of the property, there is no mowing 8 to 10 feet beyond the tree line there?
All the mowing and maintenance and trimming beyond that 8 to 10 feet would have been done by the appellants since July of 2000.
I thought you said they went back and forth on mowing. Are you talking about different property for that?
No.
Were they kind of sharing that?
No, in the 8 to 10 foot strip.
Okay.
And, but are you talking about track A or track B?
Track B.
Track B. Was that area even mowed?
Track B was, yes. And you can see from the Google photos that it's been a maintained yard area.
And it's your understanding of the record that there's no showing that anyone other than your client mowed the 8 to 10 feet in the southeastern track B portion?
No, the opposite, Your Honor. Within the 8 to 10 foot area, Mr. Bylander testified that he would take two or three swipes with his 42 inch mower, and he would take a fourth one to pull the clippings back onto his yard. And our clients, the appellants, testified that they also would mow up to the tree line. But there's no testimony from anyone, either Mr. Bylander or the respondents, that show any mowing or maintenance beyond that. Because the respondents testified that we mowed the same as where Mr. Bylander had told us to mow. So beyond that 8 to 10 feet, we believe 8 to 10 feet from the midline of the spruce trees would be the established southern boundary of the appellant's property then, based upon occupancy use, continuous open.
Well, can I reviewed this record. Is it a fair statement that neither party really knew where the boundary was, and that's why they agreed to get a survey?
Well, Your Honor, if you take a look at the record, Mr. Bylander and the appellants were never really too worried about it because they all got along very well, and it wasn't a concern. But Mr. Bylander did testify that during the 13 years that he lived there, this is what he thought the recognized boundary line was, that he treated it as such, and that he observed appellants in possession, exclusive possession, of the remainder of that property during the entire time that he lived there. And as such, I think when the court takes a look at applying the law and specifically just applies it to a sporadic tree planting, to a sandbox, you know, that may or may not have been used for the requisite amount of time. It's essentially like not seeing the forest for the trees.
Well, and I was thinking about your case, though, because it's a high standard and a high burden of proof to prove adverse possession. And one of the things I think the case law makes clear is that the children playing occasionally on a piece of property or you know, if there's a temporary use of that property, that's not necessarily hostile to the title, but it shouldn't cannot be deemed to be hostile to the title, because otherwise no one would ever let kids play in their yard. Other kids are, no one would, on these big pieces of property, no one would allow any kind of use at all of their property. I mean, where do we draw the line, I guess, legally, between what would constitute something that's hostile to the title and what would just be neighbors getting along and allowing each other to use the property, you know, where they don't really care?
Right, Your Honor. And through that, I would use the testimony of Mr. Bylander, who stated that this was a well-recognized boundary line that he believed was a property line during the time that he lived there. That he observed the appellants in exclusive possession of the property north of this line, and that they had the entire use of it during that time. And he states in the record that he makes no claim of ownership to that real property during the 13 years that he lived there.
All right, well, let's go to the respondent's facts. And the respondent now has brought forward facts that they used the property also when they moved in, so it was not exclusive. Now, how are they in error in that?
If you examine the record closely, Your Honor, I believe that the only testimony is in regard to the respondents, that they had mowed the 8 to 10 foot area north of the spruce trees and had used that area to walk down to the river because the swampy weedy area had not been mowed at that time. So it is somewhat confusing, Your Honor, but I don't believe that there's any testimony that they used tract B, which would be down by the river, but they would have walked just on that 8 to 10 foot area that would be north of the spruce trees. And the record would also show that the appellants were aware of no one using the real property during the time that the respondents purchased the property. There was some discussion about parking of a camper, and I think that would have been seen. And if they would have been over there, you know, playing and doing everything else, I think the appellants would have noted that, and they noted no use of the property.
Okay, you have 45 seconds left. I want to ask about the finding of adverse possession with reference to the house, because that's clearly an open and it's an exclusive use of the property, and you think the judge should have followed up on that finding in some manner.
Well,
how would you? What are you asking the judge to do, or what are you asking us to do relative to that finding?
It essentially leaves our clients without a remedy, and kind of leaves everyone up in the air, because the court found that there was proof of adverse possession to a certain area, but he says it's undefined. And the problem is, the court more or less is applying it to specific items, you know, that may have been put on the property as structures and their signs. And what the case law shows, and that's why I pointed out some of the unpublished cases, Your Honor, is that if you're using it as a residential yard area, you're probably not necessarily going to have the structures, you're not going to have the signs, you're not going to have the notice. But the notice is in the exclusivity of the use and the possession and the maintenance, and all of that is shown.
Did you request the trial court to order a survey so that you have a basis for that line?
No, but my request would be that if it is remanded, that the line would be established pursuant to the historical line recognized by Mr. Bylander, and that a survey be done of that line.
But how could the court order that when the court had found that there was no adverse possession? I mean, unless we reverse that finding.
Right, because I believe that was a misapplication of the law in regard to the nature and use of the property, and not recognizing that the entire yard area had been occupied exclusively during the time period.
But assuming we affirm the judge on that point, what are you requesting this court to do relative to the finding that there was adverse possession relative to the location of the house?
Well, the only alternative, Your Honor, would be to ask the court to remand it for further testimony as to obtaining a defined area so that my clients would have some remedy.
Well, wouldn't it require a new survey?
Right. If, depending on what the court, you know, would determine to be the actual area.
We have to determine where the survey ought to go.
Right. And that's what I noted in my brief, that the burden is essentially impossible because we would have to come up with so many survey demarcations of any possible finding that the court may have.
All right. Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Please the court. My name is Michael Jorgensen of the law firm of Charleston, Jorgensen, Paper Falls, Minnesota. I do represent respondents on this appeal, Terry and Don Hawk. The things I want to stress most are the things that the court first addressed with Mr. Sparby is the burden of proof and standard of review. Whether it's the appellant's claim for adverse possession or their claim for boundary by tract location, the burden is entirely upon the appellants to establish each element of their claim, and not just by preponderance of the evidence, but by clear and convincing evidence. And as of course indicated, that's a pretty high standard. Mr. Sparby has argued facts and evidence, and I'm going to be arguing some facts and evidence as well. But in the end, it's not just a matter of the scales of justice tipping slightly one way or the other. It's appellants have much a higher burden than that. And the district court believed that they had not met their burden. And it is, as the court is aware, it's not the role of this court to reweigh the evidence. The court needs to give deference to the trier of fact, that being Judge Marvin at the district court level. Obviously, he was the one there who observed the witnesses they testified, is more able to determine the credibility of the parties, and place what weight is most appropriate on the evidence that was being provided.
The district court did conclude that the 15-year period would run not until the time of the suit, but because I'm earlier than that, right?
That's what the district court said.
That's correct.
No, first of all, he was referencing when the first evidence there was of the appellant's use of this property, and he said, well, the first thing that was testified to was the planting of the trees that occurred in 2002. So whether or not, if you're going from 2002 to whether or not you're going to 2015, when the party started arguing, or you're going to the start of this lawsuit in February of 2017, 15 years have not passed. If you think about it, they planted trees in 2002, well, the earliest you would have done it is the spring or summer. This lawsuit didn't start until February of 2017. 15 years did not pass. Bottom line, did not pass. And furthermore, we don't think the first planting of the trees occurred in 2002. We present to the court aerial maps of this area several years during this course of period. And first, you were able to see any trees that they're talking about was in 2011.
Okay, so I'm following what you said, because that occurred to me, and I thought the suit was commenced in March, on March 17th. Was it February?
I believe it was February. That's what my
okay, so if it was February, then that's even more important than March, because under that theory, if that's when it commenced, the trees would have, the trees should have, would have been planted prior to February.
Was the testimony that the trees were planted in the spring as opposed to fall?
No. It doesn't say. It said 2002. When in 2002? Well, presumably not going to plant in the winter.
That's what I'm getting at in terms right. of the filing of the lawsuit. If it was March 17 or if it was February 17, whatever the date may have been, trees would have had to have been planted prior to that month in order for the 15 years to have occurred.
Right. 15 years did not pass is my point. Irregardless of when you start, you say
we may not know the actual date, but common sense is you're not planting trees in the snow.
Right.
Especially cherry trees.
Right. So it could not have been 15 years past before they initiated this lawsuit. So even if the court says, well, Judge Marvin, you're wrong, you don't go until they start fighting, you go until the time of the commencement of the lawsuit, was commenced before the 15 years had passed.
That's assuming that the trees were not planted before March.
Correct. Common sense would say it was not. There's no evidence in the record, and it's their burden of proof. They haven't indicated when they planted the trees. All we know from the record is 2002, according to them. And again, the aerial maps show there wasn't those trees they're talking about until 2011. One of the things I want to touch upon, too, is what is the disputed land we're talking about? And if the court looks at the pleadings in this case, the appellant's complaint, paragraph 17 of their complaint, they say that they're asking for adverse possession for the property described in paragraph 1 of their complaint and paragraph 9 of their complaint. Well, paragraph 1 is the property that they own by virtue of the deed. Paragraph 9 was an error. Paragraph 9 references track A, and I pointed that out to them during the course of the trial that they had made an error. And because it should have been referenced.
Something was corrected, wasn't it?
It was corrected at the time of trial. It should have been track B, okay, which is paragraph 10 of their complaint. That is what their complaint is. They're asking for adverse possession of track B. So if they're, it's very confusing throughout the course of this trial, what line are you talking about? I always presume through the course of this trial and to this date, all they've asked for is track B. To ask for something else, it's not in your pleadings. We never agreed to litigate anything else other than track B. And as the court has talked about, did they have actual, exclusive, open, hostile possession, continuous possession for 15 years of track B? Absolutely not. Even in their own briefs here, they talk about Mr. Bylander going into track B. Our testimony is we went into track B. They haven't had exclusive use of track B. They talk about other minor things they did throughout the years, such as putting up a bird feeder or a birdhouse. Well, they weren't able to say when they put it up, they weren't able to say when they took it down, and they're talking about a very small area, and where was those areas?
Well, the point's been made by the appellant that respondents did not use track B, and that and that they had exclusive use of that, and that with Mr. Bylander, the understanding was Track B was their property.
And that's simply not the case. He even admit Mr. Sparkman is here today. Mr. Bylander mowed well into Track B, that he used land into Track B. Now, did he use the entire Track B? Maybe not. But he used Track B. My clients used Track B. And that's the only thing in the pleadings, and that's what we're litigating, is Track B. Okay? So we...
Well, can I stop you there? Because I'm a little confused now, because the judge found, though, relative to Track A, that the line, the boundary line there, actually went into the home, into the rat home.
Is actually in the part Track B. It is in Track A. Track A is the west end of the property. It's kind of the front end of my client's home.
Isn't that the line that went through? Isn't it Track A that affects the home? It's Track B?
It's Track B.
Okay.
Track B affects the home.
Okay. So, all right.
And
the northern line of Track B affects the home.
I'm sorry?
The northern line of Track B affects the home.
Yes.
So it's your position that Track A doesn't even belong in this lawsuit?
No. They haven't. I mean, Track A is the appellant's property. Okay? It's already their property. They don't need to claim adverse possession for Track A. It's Track B that we're talking about that's my client's property that they want. The house does encroach upon Track B, as we just talked about. And I know the judge had made in his order that the line is going to be the original survey line, the north line of Track B, except for the house and the land immediately surrounding it. And appellant's saying, well, that doesn't work. We need something more. Well, I understand why we should have a legal description, but the burden here was upon the appellants. They would be obligated to come in with that legal description.
Well, except it's not practical in a lawsuit to have multiple surveys of where the trial court might decide that line is.
Well, I don't think it's all that.
Isn't it more appropriate for the trial court to say there's an area around the house, it's 10 feet, 15 feet, 5 feet, whatever, that is part of the house that was being used with adverse possession? I'm going to order a survey. Isn't that the appropriate way to do this?
I think it was the appellant's burden to provide that evidence to the court. It's certainly not the respondents. And
I will tell you, the former trial judge that had many of these kind of cases, mm-hmm. where no one knew where the trial, what I was going to decide as to where that line was going to be. So they didn't come in with surveys, but they asked for a survey after I said, this is where I want the line to be.
They knew where the house was. They knew they wanted that area where the house sat. And it's, and yeah, we've only had two surveys.
Say 2 feet, 5 feet, 10 feet. You're not going to run the survey for all of those possibilities
around the house.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, because I think the main, and I think this is what Judge Klopaki is getting to, and the argument made by appellant is, what's the remedy here? The judge actually found in the Batten's favor on this line going through the home.
Right.
That there was adverse possession, but I mean, otherwise, is that the way the case has ended? They don't have a remedy, and you're sitting, your client is sitting there, and they don't have an easement. Doesn't the court have some obligation to at least fashion a remedy here?
Well, just so the court's aware of the background here, we told the court from the very beginning, we're not interested in taking their house. We don't want their house. And clearly, that house was there before my clients arrived, was there before, I think, the Battens bought the property, was there before Bylanders were there. So clearly, they get their house.
Well, can you agree to some reasonable line that's close to the house?
Can we?
Can you, sure. Two folks, both of you, and then get a surveyor to do it, and ask the trial court to have that to do it. Awesome.
Well, if
you said you don't want it, so if you don't want it, let's effectuate you're not wanting it, and let's effectuate the adverse possession.
But Mr. Sparby here,
spending a lot of attorney's fees and other things to do it.
Mr. Sparby, in response to some of those questions, indicates we want this to go back to the court and draw a new line. They've already had their trial.
There is not?
I'm not talking about drawing the line. Asking the court to describe where it wants that line to be with reference to the house, and then getting a survey and take care of it.
We could do that, but it's only going to be the house, the corner of the house. We're not asking for the house. They can have the house, but we're not going to be coming back 30 feet from the edge of the house.
Didn't the trial court conclude that there was an area around the house?
Immediately surrounding the house.
The court's going to have to define what that means.
Can we, as an appellate court, indicate that respondents have ceded the house and send back, if we agree with you, and send back with instructions to the trial court to establish the line based on its determination, as well as what you're conceding?
I don't have a problem with it, what you're proposing, because we never wanted the house. That was never our intent. And if they want to draw a line around the house...
I just don't know, as an appellate court, if we can do that. I'm trying to figure that out in my head. I know what you're saying and I know what you want, but I'm not sure in terms of telling the district court the remedy has not been fashioned and here's what you should do.
Well, you know, in the court, district court has essentially already done that, saying you don't have adverse possession except for the house.
Well, and so the house plus the parents.
The immediately surrounding area.
So it needs to define what that immediate surrounding area is. Does it not?
Well,
these lawsuits got to end at some point.
This lawsuit has to end at some point.
And you could either do it on your own, or the two of you agreeing to what you could agree to be the immediate surrounding area, or you go back to the trial court and spend more time and money having the trial court determine where it is and then getting the survey.
I don't have a problem seeing with Mr. Sparby and trying to determine what that line is. Mr. Sparby and I get along very well.
Well, that would be my suggestion. And if you can't, it looks like, from my perspective, we need to address the trial court's lack of providing a remedy here.
As long as we're talking about the house, I don't have any objection to that because it's very clear on the record they have not met their burden with regards to the balance of Tract B.
Well, and doesn't it? I mean, isn't it harmful to both parties to not have this resolved? I mean, because both of them have kind of a cloud on their title here, because you've got a judicial finding that there's adverse possession with regard to the house and the surrounding area. So the respondents have a problem, but also obviously the appellants do as well, because they've got a home that is encroaching on someone else's property. I mean, it seems like this is a win-win in getting it resolved.
If we can agree on what the immediately surrounding area is, if they plan on using that to expand further claims into Track B or other ground, we're not going to reach an agreement then. I see you have 35 seconds. Is there some other area the court wants me to address?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, assuming we affirm the trial court.
The timer's not going.
Not saying we'll, but assuming we would. Well, you don't have to have time. My talking.
Sorry, Your Honor.
It's a little pee-wee hockey.
It may be appropriate for us to suggest the trial court has to fashion a remedy. And, you know, the two of you could fashion your own remedy, is like my point. And I would encourage you to do that. Don't spend any more time and money of your clients litigating that part of it if we are affirming the rest of it, all right?
Yeah. And I appreciate the sentiment, Your Honor. And believe me, between the parties, we have mediated, we have tried to settle before trial. And sometimes with adverse possession cases, as you may know from the trial court judge.
The parties here today?
Yes, they are.
Then they would have heard our comments. So want to spend any more time on that.
No, understood, Your Honor, but sometimes these tend to take on a life of their own that necessarily may not deal specifically with the land. But I am happy to hear that the respondents are ceding Track A. In regard to Track B, I still think that there's a misapplication of the law, because if the court is requiring us to show when trees were first planted for a residential yard area, that would be the only way that you would ever be able to prove adverse possession of the residential yard area. unless you actually put up a physical structure or did something, instead of just following the case law that says using the property for its normal and best use.
I think I was just suggesting that the tree line is not dispositive because it's unclear as to when the trees are planted. Not that you ignore it, but that it's not dispositive here. You have to look at all the other factors.
Oh, right. And I think what's dispositive is a recognized boundary line. By Mr. Bylander, who stated that, hey, to the north of this recognized boundary line, I make no claim of ownership whatsoever.
Although he did say that he mowed that area up to 10 feet or so.
Correct. And we're not disputing that. And we're stating it should be north of that 10-foot area.
So you're not asking, you weren't asking the trial court to set the southern boundary line to be, or the boundary line to be the southern part of B?
Well, I would suggest that based on the evidence presented, that it would have to be 8 to 10 feet north of that line.
North
because
of the
otherwise,
southerly line of track B.
Right, because otherwise I don't think that we can prove exclusive possession because both parties kind of mowed into that area.
So is that how you presented it to the trial court as well?
We did, Your Honor, but my client recognized the southern line as the tree line, and Mr. Bylander recognized that northern line as 8 to 10 feet north of that spruce tree line.
How wide is track B in that area?
I believe it's approximately 23 feet.
So if you take 10 feet away from that, you're left with 13 feet that you're arguing about now?
Well, depending on where that line actually runs in relation to the tree line. But yes, I understand your point, Your Honor. I also think, you know, for the court stating 2002 and then, you know, stating up to the point of dispute in 2015 was also a misapplication of law because, as Your Honor's aware, the claim would continue up until the date that the action was brought. The case was filed on March 17, 2017. The service
but that doesn't that mean that the trees had to have been planted before March 17 and 2002?
Right. If you, as an appellate court, are requiring a physical structure or a physical planting to be the trigger, and that's where we believe there's a misapplication of law. Because if that's the case, and you have a residential lawn area that no one's ever mowed, or excuse me, no one's ever planted trees or put a structure, but they've mowed and maintained it and trimmed it and used it for 15 years, there's case law that says that's sufficient. And to require the physical planting of a tree or a physical planting of a sandbox ignores that whole area of law.
I understand that's what we've suggested. We simply suggested that if you don't have the term, the length of 15 years, it's not relevant evidence. Not helpful evidence on the subject that you presented.
Right, but I also believe the record shows that since appellants obtained possession of it, that they've used that in the same manner as they've used the rest of the yard that they legally own. And no one's disputing that, certainly Mr. Byland is not disputing that, up to the recognized line that he has. And that's why I believe when the court's concentrating on the specific items.
So are you saying that there's some circumstantial evidence, some probative circumstantial evidence by that subsequent use, is that what you're saying?
Well, not necessarily subsequent use, but just the use.
Subsequent to the loss, again.
Oh, no, Your Honor.
But, I'm going to come back to the questions I asked you before. To the extent there's evidence in the record that the respondents used this property as well, doesn't that defeat in and of itself, a finding that there was a continuous, open, hostile use of that property for 15 years.
And Your Honor, if you review the record and read it with the understanding that I believe the respondent was mistaken in the area she was referring to where the camper was parked and the kids were playing, that was further south of the tree line. If you review the record, they stated that they followed the mowing instructions of Mr. Bylander, which would have been 8 to 10 feet north of that spruce line.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time,
we will take the matter under advisement and get a decision out in the statutory period of time. Thank you.